Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Phil Mothersbaugh, your host for today's Bible discussion. We're currently in our 13-week study series entitled Uniting Heaven and Earth, Christ in Philippians and Colossians. Now, this series explores two letters written by the Apostle Paul to first century church followers, or followers of Jesus, I should say, but which have many helpful insights for us as Christ followers today. My conversation partners for this study series are Albert Handel, the administrative and teaching pastor at Walla Walla University Church, and Brant Berglund, a faculty professor of New Testament Studies in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Let's get started. Paul has repeatedly admonished believers in Philippi not to be anxious in his letter, as we've discussed in previous sessions. Despite Paul's imprisonment and pending court hearing, despite the difficulties those followers of Jesus may be facing where they live, Paul strongly encourages them not to be anxious in Philippians 4:6, which is this week's memory verse. It reads, Paul says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." The question that occurs to me at this point, gentlemen, is why would Paul encourage the Philippian believers not to be anxious? I mean, what do we need to know about their situation that would cause him to be anxious for their anxiety? And what in their lives may cause them to be worried or concerned? And did he provide them with an antidote for anxiety? And if so, what was it?
You know, Phil, I think some of these times we think of them as being completely removed from our world, but they're similar to us because some of the things that they were experiencing were could be right off of the headlines for us today. What's interesting about this letter to the people of Philippians in the town of Philippi, the Roman colony, this was a political hotspot in the time of the Roman occupation. The people that would have been in this town would have been seeing Roman soldiers, would have been seeing Roman regulations. And in fact, this is kind of an interesting idea to think about. When Julius Caesar was assassinated around this period of time, his assassins created a war that was just to the west of this town in about 44, BC. And so this would have been, a few decades before this time, this would have been an area that had a lot of Roman activity, a lot of Roman hotspot flare-ups. These people lived in a political climate that was spicy, something that we would recognize.
And I think that people are also worried about Paul himself. Paul's in prison, right? Their spiritual forebear, they're not sure what's going to happen to him. And so they have plenty of reason to be anxious, at least according to the world standards. But you asked a lot of questions.
I did.
And does he give an antidote?
Yeah.
Yeah. My first thought when I hear Paul say, be anxious for nothing, it sounds like Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Do not worry. It's the exact same Greek word, merimnao, exactly the same Greek word. So when Jesus says, don't be anxious about anything, about what you'll eat, what you'll drink, what you'll wear, don't worry. How do I just turn it off? How do I just stop worry or anxiety? Because I have students and I have friends who have anxiety disorders. They take a test and immediately they clam up, their brain goes blank, and their pulse races. They don't want it to happen. It just does. Is there an antidote?
Especially when it's coming from everywhere.
Exactly.
From inside the church, from outside the church, right. All around you, on the headlines.
Right.
What do you do when that anxiety is pervasive?
Well, maybe this was a trick question, but what I guess I was getting at, and maybe I wasn't clear enough, is that in the verse itself, Philippians 4:6, there is an antidote. And Paul says, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And what are their requests? Well, they can be anything. They could be for their own anxiety. There could be their anxiousness about Paul. And it seems to me that the prayer and supplication with thanksgiving is the antidote. Maybe we can talk about that for a couple of minutes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not just the prayer and supplication. That's our task. But verse 7 tells us what the results will be. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. To replace anxiety with peace would be a huge gift for a lot of people I know. to replace fear of what's happening in the world politically, fear about finances, fear about ICE agents coming to their town, right? Fear of all kinds of things. What if God gave them peace, right?
And Paul seems to be saying, let's do plug and play here, and let's replace anxiety with a prayer and a supplication to God to remove the anxiety and give them a thankful heart and be thankful for how he's going to answer that prayer. That's what seems to jump out at me in this particular verse. And you might see it a little differently, and I think we all probably see it differently, but I just like the idea that Paul is urging them to turn to prayer instead of anxiety.
And well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's through prayer that we get something that we didn't have before. This peace of God is a gift. It's something that God gives us that we can't naturally produce. It reminds me of that verse in Ezekiel 36:26, where God is speaking and he says, a new heart and a new spirit will I give you, and I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. God is saying, I have peace for you, but I'm going to have to remove the anxiety. I'm going to give you something that you can't produce on your own. I'm going to give you something that you can't even imagine unless I supernaturally give it to you. And so that's an exchange that I think God is offering here that is that's pretty special.
And I think that I like the way you put that, because when my heart is not soft toward God and it's more like a stone, it's kind of threatening to just give up my anxiety because that's where I go to naturally maybe. And that's a conscious choice that I have to make. I have to make a conscious choice that I'm not going to be angry. I'm not going to let this be. I'm not going to be anxious about this. I'm going to offer this to God in prayer. Mm-hmm. I don't think we think about offering our anxiety to God. What kind of an offering is that? You know, it's like problems.
Well, isn't that kind of fundamentally what prayer is anyway? When we come to God, we're really trying to get something that we don't have. We're trying to access something that we don't naturally possess. And prayer, often we think about it as asking for things, but really prayer is aligning ourselves with the heart of God. Putting ourselves into different rhythms, into different ways of thinking. And that really is what God is offering here, to say, my peace I want to give to you that transcends anything that you have, anything that you understand. It's an exchange. Mm-hmm. And I want you to align your thinking, your perspectives, your worldview with mine.
And I love the phrase here, the peace of God which surpasses all comprehension will guard your hearts and minds. It's like putting guards at the front door and saying, your mind is protected by this peace. And now, Albert, you said that, you know, prayer isn't just asking. I love verse 6 because it says, yes, you should ask, but it's also a certain type of asking. And here's where we get into the spiritual disciplines. You know, we're invited and instructed to pray in a certain way, and that is make my needs known to God, but do so with thanksgiving as if he's already taken care of it, right? I'm praying and thanking God for what he's going to do, even if he hasn't done it yet, and also to be thankful about the things he's done in the past. What a difference in my daily perspective when I can look back and say, wow, God, look at the things you've done. Here are my challenges today. I thank you. You're going to take care of these just like you did in the past, because that's the type of God you are. What a guard that is for my mental health, my emotional health.
Yeah, and I don't want to put too much into this text that's not there, but I think about that thing in parenting where your kids might ask you for something, but you offer them something they didn't ask for because you know what they actually need.
What they need, yeah.
And so in this passage, it says, make your requests known to God, and then God will give you the peace that passes all of your understanding. It's almost as if God is saying, absolutely, let me know what is on your heart, but it's peace that I'm going to give you because that's what you actually need.
Yeah.
I mean, we could spend a lot of time on this, I know. And one thing you guys made me think of was why Jesus urged his followers, his apprentices, those 12 guys that were trying to figure out what this Messiah thing was all about, because it didn't fit the pattern in their own thinking.
True.
He used to tell his followers to follow his example of daily private prayer before God the Father. He would often just leave the disciples and disappear, and they go, where did Jesus go? Well, I think he went up to the hills to pray. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, teach us to pray. So he starts modeling how this conversation with the Father goes. And I think, if I read my New Testament correctly, that this was something that every follower of Jesus is encouraged to practice? Or am I just reading something
No,
here
to learn how to pray. That's a fundamental part of the Sermon on the Mount. Lord, teach us to pray, and he gives a prayer that includes thanksgiving. It includes asking, but it includes and teaches us how to ask for what I need today, right? My daily bread, and then to give thanks for what I do have and forgiveness. Albert, the things we really need, you said, one of the things I need most is to learn to forgive those around me and to be gracious with them. And he teaches me to ask for that. And then to say, look, just as gracious as I am with others, he'll be that way to me. That opens up a huge door for me to be far more gracious with people around me than I might have been otherwise.
Well, and that's the transparency, I think, that Paul is implying here. But some of these believers in Philippi and Colossae, as we'll find out, some of them are brand new converts. They're coming from a Roman background of polytheism, and they're being told Jesus Christ is the king of everything. And that's stunning, and that takes some adjustment. And it's also going to rattle some cages when they talk to their friends and say, hey, I've been learning about this King Jesus. And they go, well, which God is that? You know, and then they have to try to explain it. So I think there's some – I think what you both were getting at is the challenges of that day, 2,000 years ago, are not that far removed at all from our challenges today, the distractions that keep us from prayer, the distractions that keep us anxious about things. It's not difficult to be anxious in this day and age, is it?
I don't think so, but it's surprising to me that we make so much of a big deal today from mental health perspective and psychology, psychiatry, about anxiety, that it's a recognized disorder. And this passage 2,000 years ago is addressing anxiety. It is addressing head on. And I'm wondering, do we live in a culture that does not practice Thanksgiving enough, that we are not a grateful culture any longer? Are we not bringing these needs to God? Would this solve a lot of mental health challenges out there? Or am I thinking about religion as some kind of panacea for problems that it isn't ever designed to solve? I kind of think it would fix some of these issues.
Well, I mean, the solutions of God are beyond our capacity to fully grasp how wise they are. And I think of something like prayer. There is an aspect to it that transforms. There's an aspect to it that connects to the divine. And yet, there's an aspect to it that is probably profoundly healing to the body to move into a period of silence where you're focused on things other than your own world, other than your own problems, other than all of the garbage around you. When Jesus tells his disciples, go and pray, shut the door, and pray to your Father who's in secret, there's something about the quietness that comes when we focus ourselves on God and God alone. That is a unique time in my day. I can't think of too often when I'm focused completely, completely on God and God alone.
You know, we have let the interest in this particular passage about heavenly citizenship push us right up to the end of our time together. But I want to thank you for the insights into how believers walk today can somewhat be modeled after the admonitions that Paul gave to the believers in Philippi and Colossae. But we're going to have to wrap it up. I'm sorry for the the short time today, but I thought it was great discussion. Next week, we're going to look at another theme emphasized by Paul, the preeminence of Christ. And my thanks to Naomi Busby and Faith Christensen, our program engineers, and to all of you for listening in. Until next time, for The Good Word, I'm Phil Mothersbaugh.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.